eyes. I know that you have, 'cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles.
Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States, in North America, and as I sometimes like to say, in the Milky Way galaxy, for those out there and beyond the planet, if you're wondering where we are. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and much happier place, and I know with everyone's help, we'll do it. We are the fastest-growing spiritual, psychic, and UFO radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. And today's interview will be really out of this world. During the first hour, we had a very interesting discussion with Gordon Ashner Davidson, joined by David Spring, Ken Pickard, and Zach Smith of the Natural Resources Defense Council on the Galactic Alliance perspective of the U.S. Navy and their activities here in the Northwest and elsewhere around the world. And now, for the second hour, we will be having Dr. Richard Allen Miller. He's a wonderful scientist and a physicist, and he's had a very interesting career. He's on the line now. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm good.
Okay, good. One of the topics we'll be talking about today, Richard's got so many talents, and it'd be easy to talk to him for 4 or 5 hours, but we boil it down. I usually just let my guests talk whatever they like to talk about, but I would like to talk about Fukushima today. And some of Richard's water research. He tells me before the interview that he did know he was a student of friends with Dr. Jerry Pollack, who is of course a famous water scientist at the University of Washington, and also Dr. Masaru Emoto in Tokyo, Japan. And with that, what I'd like to do is just quickly to set the stage for the rest of the hour. I'd like to do a quick prayer for the children of Fukushima. And I'd like to start it off with this particular piece by Beethoven, which was Dr. Emoto's favorite piece. It'll just take a second, then I'll say a short prayer, and then we'll go on to the interview. With that, I'd just like to send a prayer all over the world of love and light to the children of Fukushima, and especially to the Emoto Peace Project and its wonderful and talented director, Michiko Hayashi, who's been working tirelessly to help the children of Fukushima. One of the projects that they do is to send what they call angel water to the children of Fukushima. This angel water actually does prevent cancer. The tune that I just played is called Ode to Joy by Beethoven. It was one of Dr. Masaru Emoto's favorite tunes, and I just wanted to say this prayer. And this is a favorite prayer. It's called the Hanapono from Hawaii. I want to say it briefly, that it goes in four lines. You first say, if you repeat after me, water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you. And water, we thank you. Again, two more times. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you, and water, we thank you. And again, last time, water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we love you, and water, we thank you. That, Dr. Emoto found that does scientifically change the water and revitalizes it. And I want everyone around the world to send love and light to the children of Fukushima, and also to the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo to help them with their efforts in helping these kids of Fukushima. I will also be doing a prayer ceremony tomorrow night on Sunday, August 8th at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So if you if you'd like at 8 p.m. tomorrow, which would be 8 p.m. in Seattle, San Francisco, or 12 noon in Japan, or if you're in if you're in Central Europe in Germany, that would be at 5 a.m. Please say this water prayer and be with me when I send love and light to the children of Fukushima and the Immortal Peace Project. With that, I'd like to bring on Dr. Miller. Dr. Miller, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm good. You know, I grew up in out in the south end of Seattle, and I am a product of Seattle when it was really a small, very cool place to live.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful.
My daughter was born in Bellevue, so, you know, I'm familiar with the stomping grounds because that's where I grew up as a boy. I was a product of Boeing, and when they lost the B-1 project in 1970, Jerry Pollack was my lead. He hired me at the University of Washington, and the rest is history. And for 45 years, I haven't really been very close in touch with Jerry until recently again, and it's as if no time has gone, like with real friendships. He's been my friend for 45 years, just like Dr. Stanley Krippner, another person that comes up occasionally to visit me here in Oregon. Fukushima is way worse than the media has even bothered to report. Mm-hmm. Aside from Fukushima, there were other reactors that were not mentioned that were also severely affected. They weren't complete meltdowns like Fukushima's three at Daiichi Forms, but they had their poll to the point now where 48% of the children in Tokyo Prefect all have some kind of thyroid anomaly. And today,
really?
I've got military documents indicating that aircraft is now being affected by the particulate radioactive ionizing air that's in the stratosphere right now. What basically is happening is the metal is fatiguing and rubber and other kinds of gaskets are disintegrating. And if you don't believe that, you can actually just look on your freeway at what's happening to car tires and how much more rubber you are seeing hitting the road. Everything is deteriorating as a direct result of that ionizing radiation from Fukushima.
I have to tell you something, and this goes on to the spiritual side, and I'm saying this, Richard, only to be of help, because I am a psychic. And about a month ago, I was at James Gillian's UFO ranch down in Southwest Washington. I was there with a famous spiritual healer named Ray Chandran from Japan, and we were getting messages then when I stayed down there at the ranch about a month ago for me to ask on air for benevolent help off planet, so they could step in and help clean up the radiation in and around Fukushima and Japan as well. And so I've done that now on several programs. Because
When I grew up, it was the Aquarian Foundation, and out near Redmond, it was Wayne Aho and a group in Arlington, actually, that was the UFO group with George Adamski and Marcia Moore and others. That's how old I am. I've been there a long time, Charlie. And in terms of aliens, I would suggest that probably, more likely, we are creating our own apocalypse and aliens with our imagination. Hmm. We right now have J2 software that would allow a minority report type of profiling on you, knowing what you're going to do personally before you do. Hmm. How does that work? And I mean, they have those algorithms now, and they're being deployed. Hmm. And so, with that said, asking for intervention is, I think we need to start inside ourselves. If you want to know where the alien is hiding, it's probably in that fourth genome blood type, unknown, rhesus negative. And that, it means, from a metaphor, that your so-called war for the planet Earth is going on inside each of us.
Sure.
That's
sure.
Where we have that choice.
Sure. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, we talked about this earlier, Richard, was the fourth phase of water, the easy water that Professor Pollack's written about. For my listeners, could you explain that concept, perhaps? You probably understand it much better than I do.
Well, water has 18 phases, okay. Of which Jerry has focused on the fourth phase. But there are 18 basic phases of water. This is where it can exist in Mars, for example, which is an unusual and unique phase of water. It exists as a slushy ice at 100 minus 100 Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. That's because of Boyle's law and pressure, PV equals NRT. And when you have no pressure, and the pressure on Mars is so thin that if the temperature at your feet was at 70 degrees, the air is so thin that by the time it reached your head, you would be at a minus 5. That's how little pressure is on Earth,
wow.
I mean on Mars.
Sure.
And that pressure then causes the water not to be able to freeze, and it remains as a liquid slushy ice at 100 minus 100 Fahrenheit, and that is called a phase of water. The one that Jerry has identified, which is a fourth phase of water, is when you take hydrogen peroxide, H2O2, and you add a third hydrogen molecule to it, making it H3O2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens next? That's two extra hydrogen atoms.
Okay.
It's normally H2O.
Right.
We've got us two extra hydrogen atoms.
Mm-hmm.
How that forms in nature, and it's everywhere. That's where Jerry discovered it was in the water in our bodies, and the way the muscles have a polarity to work using water as a battery. And Modo and some of the others that are more yin zen forms for me, I'm more of a physicist. I want to know how the physical part of it works.
Sure.
Yeah, well, it's just my reference point. Yours
sure.
is probably higher with emotional. You know, he got different layers of a hologram and resolution, if you will, more details,
mm-hmm.
like EQ is over IQ.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at water, mm-hmm. you have a drop of water that comes down and it hits a pool of water. What happens next is a rippling goes out. We'll call that the future. And a secondary water droplet, appears to be a water droplet, goes back up about halfway. The thing is, it's not a solid water droplet. What it is exclusion zone water that has surrounded air or the medium that the water fell in, air, and it forms what's called a cavitation bubble, where the air inside is a topological surface turning inside out on itself.
Hmm.
If you want more detail on that, it would be Mark LeClaire at MIT. Now, there's other processes we won't discuss today in terms of how that's done with microwave and other patented forms to make exclusion zone water. But basically, it is the bubbles behind a submarine that when the submarine is going through the water and it's churning that water, it creates a cavitation bubble behind it that creates what they call a submarine signature. You can tell what it is by the way the bubbles are formed.
Hmm, interesting.
He first noted this concept when dolphins were playing sonar luminescence. What they would do is blow these little sonar bubbles and form a couple thousand of them in a ring and then play with the ring and at some point get bored and let the ring float off up to the surface as air bubbles. And at the very moment it would touch the surface of the air, it would pop into bright light. It was a form of cold fusion. And that was the dolphin's artistic form of expression and play.
Wow,
so
that's amazing.
There's a lot more going on here.
Wow.
You know, there's technologies have many faces, and we're only now discovering them in other animals
sure.
where they have things we never even dreamed of.
Well, one question I'd love to ask you, Richard, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but the angel water that the Emoto Peace Project gives to the children of Fukushima, which has actually been shown to prevent cancer.
Well, they were trying to clean the water with prayer and things. Okay.
Well,
so
then,
the intentionality experiment.
Right.
Now, I have a whole chapter in my new book on the difference between intent and intentionality.
Oh,
intentionality is when you don't quite make it. That
uh-huh.
means you had the intent to do something,
right.
but it did not happen.
Okay.
And that is when Maxwell Smart said, missed it by that much. However, intent is what happens at the end of the day.
Sure.
And that's whether it's good, bad, or ugly. In other words, you can have karma where you fought your way down the hall, or you kind of fell down the hall in a flowing sort of manner where it was effortless. You have that choice.
Sure.
The whole thing is, at the end of the day, your intent is what actually happened.
Right.
Now, at our level of consciousness, that would suggest that man does not have free will, because free will would suggest he had full disclosure. Because he doesn't, he has true will, and now intent becomes very close to the concept of purpose and why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's a reason we're here, and in magic systems, which is like anthropology with, you know, Hopi and indigenous aborigines and things like that, they would have a way of approaching their reality where you don't need to know how it works to be able to use it.
Sure.
A woman
sure.
does that in the way she drives an automobile. She doesn't think about an internal engine combustion. She knows that if she puts the key in a certain way and does a little ritual, turning it to the right, whatever, left, that something will happen. And when it doesn't, then she's confused because she has expectations.
Well,
and that is called cybernetic anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
It is written about in the concept of memes and the way we group information and our understanding and relationship to it. I'm a physicist where you're more of an intuitive. You know, there's possibilities where the harmony is that we're both right, because in fact what the truth is, imagination is reality. At our level of consciousness,
that's true.
It is.
That's
what
true.
Creates our aliens and our apocalypse.
Well,
and so if you have a bunch of people out there trying to talk about, you know, asking for intervention from aliens, you've just made it so.
Yeah. Well,
you've got to be responsible
sure.
for the thoughts you choose to entertain.
Sure.
This is part of being evolved and, you know, being able to move to the next level of consciousness.
Sure. Sure.
And, okay, well, I had to train SEALs on that.
Sure.
And so we got to a place where beliefs were tools. They're
mm-hmm.
arbitrary. The fact that you were born in Bellevue or whatever would pre-suggest that you're going to be more of a Christian than you are a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been in Iraq or India, you might be a Hindi. But
right.
they say it's arbitrary.
Right.
However,
right.
it isn't so much what you believe that's so important. It's how you go about your belief. That is what Emoto was suggesting in his intentionality experiment.
Sure.
The very thought of how psyche is placed into matter and becomes matter.
Well, one of the, I know his famous experiments, including, I think there was one group, I'm trying to remember, I think this happened. He took a group of at least 1,000 people in California and had them focus intentionality and positivity at a glass of water in Tokyo at his office. And
yeah, Kumbaya, I got to be really careful about testimonials because I, you know, basically would not have seen it if I hadn't have believed it.
Sure.
We're filtering everything that we're doing.
Sure.
And so really, the magic or black box, the thing that makes it so, as Picard would say, is your brain.
Right.
And your upper
right.
brain,
right.
the one that we normally associate with the mind, it's not. Is the one that's there to make all your beliefs true.
Right.
Now,
right.
if that's true, as an assumed truth, now beliefs become tools, not a given driver.
Right, right.
And so it becomes a tool that if you were a staunch Christian and you had to go over to Iraq, you could get yourself killed.
Right, right.
And so it doesn't mean you get rid of your Christianity. In fact, I have a pair of bell-bottom pants used to wear in Seattle. I'm never going to fit in again, but it's so comfortable to me, I would never throw those out.
Sure, sure.
Well, same thing with your beliefs. They're very comfortable,
sure.
and they're very useful to you. And being a Christian and believing in prayer and faith has powerful energies associated with it. Again, the powerful energies are not in the doing it. It's your belief in doing it.
Well, one of the things I know he talked about was love and gratitude, and that if helping to create a better world, that if more people thought about that and practiced it, that we wouldn't have so many wars and people would learn to live more in harmony than they do.
Well, the problem is that war is good for business. And a capitalistic system
I know. Well,
is built on the fact that if there isn't a war, everybody's going to go broke. And so what happens next is, instead of the military coming home and working in education as a Smokey the Bear, they come home jacked up on adrenaline and then start pumping iron, become law enforcement, and now what we have is a schizoid crowd. I did studies on scopolamine and how to take someone like that and manipulate them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't think that this is not happening today in terms of the creepiness of what's happening with law enforcement and the original serve and protect? And I would say that this is no longer the America that I served and protected.
Right.
And what's going on? Well, let's take a look. There is transnational corporations that are four and five times bigger than the state of Oregon. Now, Jimmy Carter just came out in ARP. I read ARP. I'm an old man. And he interviewed saying, yes, Washington is for sale. Your politicians are not your friends anymore. They're supposed to be working for you. And what they've done is created an element of fear where you feel you need them.
Well, I think things are turning around, though, slowly but surely.
They are.
They are.
But,
absolutely.
You got to do it one person at a time.
That's right.
Because I can't, from an archetypal point of view, get out of here until you get off the couch yourself and do your part. I mean, that's a metaphor.
Sure.
But it's like everybody's got to do it.
Sure.
And here's
sure.
the bad news. Your children are watching you. And that's how they learn how to do spousal abuse and gambling.
Right.
They're watching how you do it. And so you have a fiduciary responsibility for teaching your children well.
Well, absolutely. And one of the, I think that we, I think the light forces are winning, though, Richard. And I think that people need, of course, need to learn to better habits and to think positive about their lives so their children, they can teach their children positive things.
Yeah, well, the way I read it in the appendix ads is there's no such thing as light and darkness. It's all man's interpretation and everything is God. And so there are no devils. There are demons, but they're lesser. They want to be you. They're lesser, like a shadow from the sun projected on the ground.
Sure.
That's you, but it's a lesser form of you. That's your demon.
Sure.
And so, okay. With that said, I mean, I'm speaking like as a physicist now, you know, in metaphor, trying to give a ground rules on engagement. How do you engage yourself in terms of moving to another level without the confusion? When I go to Europe or Asia or even Mexico, the three words that are always used about Americans is ignorant, ill-informed, and complacent. And believe me when I tell you this, I'm a product of Seattle. I'm not buying into any of this stuff. And I think Seattle was one of the... We had a bookstore called Beltane that was 2 months earlier than Herman Slater's Warlock Shop. That was Seattle, Washington. As I remembered it. And I was just a reflection of other things going on with all those scientists and their children. I'm a child of my father worked at Boeing just like everybody else is dead. And when Boeing went upside down, I remember the sign with the last person out of town, please turn off the light.
I remember that. Richard,
it was 30,000 people.
Oh, my goodness. Richard,
I know, and they were all top end.
Wow.
And then
wow.
what happened next, Jerry Pollack reached out and hired me. That's when I did my boyfriend. I didn't work for Jerry. I worked under him. He was my lead. That means he was doing his own thing. I had my other thing around the corner with higher security clearances. And around the corner was the boys from Brazil.
Wow.
There was Delgado was there before he went to Yale.
Huh.
Dr. Moore was doing BZ, ketamine, telepathy studies, you know, rare gases.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I was doing chip implants and microwave. Anesthesiology.
Richard, if you could hold on for a second, I just want to make a station announcement. For those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here on 1150 AM in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle here in the United States. We're having a fascinating interview with Dr. Richard Allen Miller, one of the world's most interesting scientists. Richard, what kinds of things are you working on now, by the way, in your research?
Right now, one of my projects deals with an older epoch use of sound and dance or movement to change space-time. We know that the pyramids were moved by sound by some manner. We don't know how. This was always a Russian and later, earlier, German interest. I'm onto it. I am working with what's called a Roden coil and its relationship to the fourth dance of Gurdjieff. And it turns out the step dance, if you go to meetings with remarkable men and you go to the dance scene, it'll come up on YouTube, you'll watch a fourth stage of dancing where 20 whirling dervish do a precision that turns out to be exactly the same geometry as a Roden coil. Now, how does that work?
Well, I have to tell you that one of the psychics who I knew before she passed on last year was Dolores Cannon, and I read many of her books, and one of them was that she had gone back in time to the time of the pyramids, to when they were actually being built, Richard. And I'll just share this story briefly with you because I think you'll find it interesting. Many of the people who built the pyramids actually escaped from Atlantis after Atlantis had collapsed as a civilization. And many of them ended up in Egypt, and they helped the local inhabitants there build these pyramids. And what she saw from her psychic abilities, travel backward in time, Richard, was a group of people in a circle saying these saying a certain kind of music and a hum. And they lifted these stones with a certain octave. Now, I don't remember all the details.
Exactly. It's written about even in the old Bibles that you don't use anymore,
right,
like the Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Formation,
right,
and how sound and words create mother blocks and further meaning than just the word itself.
And I have to tell you, one of the things that's very interesting that Dr. Emoto, before he passed away last year, was very cognizant of these different vibrations. And there was one... Oh, I used to have a tuning fork. I think it was labeled 144 hertz. I don't remember the hertz exactly.
There are frequency bands that have dosimetry,
right,
and effects on biological processes in the body. This was the thing I talked about last night a little bit on Perry Cassidy. It was titled Electromagic and Yogatronics and How Supermen Were Made Using Video Feedback Systems. We use not just biofeedback, we use video systems where we could use color and sound to actually talk to specific neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chill that you have going up and down your spine is the release of dimethyltryptamine. Now that you know that, and you know what dimethyltryptamine as the spirit molecule might do to the pineal gland, you can do exercises to, entertain the control, the conscious control of the release of that chill as a form of kundalini.
Hmm.
And that was one of the things that we did because it has a physical analog to it. What it does is it stimulates the pineal gland with a light beam. You know, it's an invisible light beam. That's what the chill is. It's a light. It's an actual light beam going up and down the spine. And it imprints on the pineal gland and sets up a standing wave in the neural cavity. And Robert O. Becker and I, in Clinic 7 of the University of Washington's hospital, actually demonstrated the regeneration of nerve tissue out of the neural cavity with adults using that technique.
Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that fascinating? You know, for many scientists here on the Earth, Richard, we just don't know much about it, but it's a fascinating area.
Well, you're getting some of it right now, and that's the deal. And what I would really like to encourage is that most of this material is unknown. I know when I don't know. I connect dots. I don't have my toys anymore like Jerry does.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to have a big university and access to toys so you can go in and vet something down and rather than trying to surf it on the Internet. There's so much disinformation out there now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
And really, it doesn't matter whether I'm a scientist or a spiritualist like yourself. The answer is inside. That's where you're going to find your real truth.
Well, I agree.
And it's different for each of us. That's God's will at our level of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's where you can't make judgment on another.
Mm-hmm.
You do, but you're not supposed to because that is, a true will. That's what you're trying to do is, love is the law, love under will.
Right, right. Well, I believe that, Richard, that we're all powerful spiritual beings and that the true nature of humanity on this planet is to do good. And in a benevolent nature. And
so my metaphor, the way I feel about myself,
mm-hmm.
is that I'm outside space-time. It's as if, and I'm going to be really clear about this, it's as if my future is talking to me right now and literally changing my past, which is the true wave. Now, in a cavitation ball, when that drop of water hits the pool and the outward waves go out, that's the future. That is a secondary wave.
Mm-hmm.
The primary wave are the water waves that go inward and slap each other and form a thin film ball around the air in a cavitation process where the air inside is turning inside out on itself as a torus, just like Roger Penrose describes at Princeton and his geometric universe. With that said, this is now the form of cold fusion, because what you've done is you've created a doorway going into the out of, if you will.
Interesting.
And that is hauled together by exclusion zone water, a special form of water, a fourth phase of water, which is what Jerry's doing his research on at the UW.
Well, he's a wonderful scientist. I can't say enough good things about Dr. Jerry Pollock.
Well, he's mellow. He's a laid-back, easygoing kind of guy like I am. Most physicists are nerds. You know, we don't have agendas. We're just, you know, blue sky. Have no idea where it's going to take us, and that's the journey. It doesn't matter whether you're successful or not. It's about the journey of discovery.
Well, isn't that true with life in general, though? All of us are on a path for
discovery.
Well,
there you go. And so each of us has our own way of relating to self.
That's true.
More of a physical planer. I'm looking for analog. Mm-hmm. If I want to know if I'm spiritual, what does my physical body look like?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like going to a fat doctor. What's wrong with that picture?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a metaphor. If the doctor's fat, is he going to be able to help you?
Sure.
Well, you look at things literal, and everybody's different in the way they do that because of their beliefs and whatever.
Well,
I'm like the way Seattle was, where I've got a really true, open mind going toward things.
Sure.
Seattle used to be a very cool place.
Mm-hmm. Well, it still is. It's a beautiful area.
Man,
it still is.
I had to bury my father, and just getting across town up to Washelli was a nightmare.
Really? There's never any traffic jams in Seattle.
On Greenwood.
Just joking.
Yeah, good luck with that.
We have a lot of traffic here.
I know, man. And, I don't know, it's like Seattle used to, you know, we had rush hour even back in the 50s because Boeing had, you know, ships. But this is nuts now in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know people are working hard. There's bus systems here, and they're doing the best they can for transit systems. Actually,
I remember when microwave was out in Redmond. Mm-hmm. Before Redmond, that's where you hunted rabbits.
Oh, really?
Funny. Oh, yeah. It was a wilderness forest.
How funny. Well,
they had the ferry up at Markledale and, you know, wherever.
Oh,
but, you know, it's just different now.
Well, one of my degrees is in transit planning from the University of Illinois. So, but I haven't had a chance to use it except maybe in theory as I'm sitting in traffic. But Richard, I wanted to ask you real quick the angel water that the Emoto Project gives to the kids of Fukushima to prevent cancer. Why do you think it works? Why do you think it prevents cancer? I'm just curious.
Unknown. There are some interesting recent studies dealing with fullerene or buckyball fullerene water.
Okay.
That came out of Russia and some of the satellites, mostly from satellites originally. Now, what a fullerene is when you take 60 carbon atoms. They will form a ball called a buckyball. It's a base center cubic. It's a diamond body. It's based on the vector equilibrium matrix and Buckminster Fuller. It is 60-60 or C120. 120 molecules will also form a larger ball. The smaller C60 molecule has a stitches between two atoms of 1.4 nanometers, which allows the injection of a single water molecule of exclusion zone water, H3O2, will just fit inside that. When you make that, what happens next is that the water restructures the carbon in such a manner that it forms nanotubes. And these nanotubes are what will eventually become the space elevator. There are literally 100, as an allotrope of carbon, there are 100 times stronger than diamond.
Really?
And, yeah, they're very strong. And if you put exclusion zone water, it causes the magnetic fields, electromagnetic fields, to set up nanotubes that will hunt and destroy ionizing radiation. And what the studies in Hungary and some other of these countries, what they've done is give lethal doses of radiation to rats, feed them fullerene water, and there's a 95% recovery.
Well, you know, isn't that amazing? Because I've heard from medical doctors that traditional chemotherapy and surgery only has a 3% success rate. And so given the choice of between a 3% a procedure that uses 3% success rate with chemotherapy and surgery versus using this fullerene water, like the angel water that the Emoto Project gives to the kids in Fukushima, I think obviously people would choose the one with the higher success rate.
I think that anything, the way water works, so that everybody gets a visual, is that there are many different forms of water. You start with para and ortho water. These are levo rotaries, where the dipole moment goes off to the right as opposed off to the left. That's levo, and that's called ortho and para water. Then you have isotopes, deuterium and tritium. Then you have clustering, like Kerry Reams talked about. That would be where you have H7O9 and a free radical ion, three water molecules forming a cluster and an electron floating around to ionize. Now, those were the basic first forms that in states of mixture will have phase states or phase diagrams in three dimensions. And, you know, in terms of pressure, temperature. And so you have these 18 ways water can appear, and then you have different isomers or isotopes, isomers and isotopes of water that allow the unusual things of H3O2. Basically, what makes water so interesting is it is the smallest molecule that actually has a dipole moment. Hydrogen and oxygen, 1 and 6. Helium does not, as a H2, HE2, it doesn't have any dipole moment. Now, it's that dipole moment that sets up a dimensional gate, if you will, and allows water to now be like a computer chip. And that's where the exclusion zone aspect comes in, because when water touches something, it changes the relationship of the para and ortho and all the different other forms of clustering of water. And that's why Rustam Roy did work in homeopathy, where he dropped a small amount of something. Homeopathy is just a small amount. And the way water then structures throughout the unit as a response to that. And if it's plastic, it doesn't do anything. And if it's tellurium, for example, it'll run right up the coast of that container and out over the edge. Very unusual. It's like it defies gravity, it would appear. Now, with that, some of the first studies of why we started looking at what water is inside the body. And how does your thoughts become physical matter? And I'm going to suggest in the articles that I'm writing, I sent you a couple in the early stages of this, it's a chapter in a new book I'm writing, is actually how your thoughts are brought into matter, your imagination becoming reality.
Well, here's something interesting that Dr. Emoto used to say, and he said that two things, water has memory and water is God, which I thought was fascinating.
Well, yes, it's where God manifests, if you will. I don't think water is God so much as, you know,
manifestation of it.
Interesting molecule as the first of complex molecules to go up the line.
There was a French researcher, and I hope I have his name pronouncing it correctly. Luc Montag, a French researcher. I'm sure you know him. He was.
You're talking about Schumacher?
No, it was a French scientist who found that if you have like a particular, like have two bottles of water, and they're both sealed. Okay, they're not exchanging anything physically in this third dimension, but maybe this was with homeopathy.
That would be, and that guy, there's a bunch of scientists doing the homeopathy stuff. It was Rustam Roy that, at Penn State, that started that whole study down there.
Okay, yeah. Well, I just want to explain quickly to my listeners, and I'm sure you know about this, but it's just fascinating where the homeopathy, let's say they dropped like a drop of a plant essence in one of the bottles, that would transfer to the next adjoining bottle of water, even though they had no physical contact. It would transfer
over. Well, that originally started with Motoyama, even before Emoto. Motoyama's work is the stuff I'll write about in my book, Spook Central, when I worked at MRU.
Well, here's an idea using this phenomenon. If, for example, you could take, let's say, a whole bunch of this angel water and put it right next to the nuclear reactors of Fukushima and right next to the Sea of Japan, would the characteristics of that cancer prevention and getting rid of the radiation, would that somehow go into the water around the Sea of Japan into the reactor through osmosis in the same way that
I don't know. I know that Hutchinson and their whole so-called thing using radar scalers,
right,
trying to destabilize orbitals, you know, making them decay quicker than half-lives that are
right,
currently in the literature.
Right.
I think that no matter what else is said, that before we even concern ourselves with cleanup, I think we need to turn the switch off. I think that there should be a massive movement against the use of nuclear energy as a source of power. And
good.
I think that every single plant needs to be turned off. My partner, Matt Stein, has written a paper called 400 Chernobyls.
Right.
What does that bring to mind? And we've got 16 of them sitting on fault lines just in the Madrid fault line in the Midwest. Going down into California, I mean, it's a nightmare down there. Santa Barbara, whatever.
Right.
And what I'm going to suggest is that nuclear energy is not safe, it's not cheap, and why are we doing it? Because there are certain individuals that run everything that's their source of income. And it doesn't mean it's good for us. We have, just in Oregon, have buoys that move up and down, bob up and down with the tide, and that movement up and down is enough to power the coastline.
Well,
now,
why are
we not doing something inexpensive, cheap, that does not have toxicity and no remedy? Fukushima right now doesn't even have a solution, and it's out of control.
Right.
And there is no working plan at this moment that will stop that nonsense.
Right. Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Richard, that nuclear technology as a power source is completely failed.
Well, you got to turn the switch off before you even think about cleaning
Absolutely.
Up. Cleaning up, like
Absolutely.
Hanford,
Absolutely.
Right now, is leaking into the Columbia River. If you want to know why your fish is hot, it's because of Hanford, not Fukushima. Fukushima is now doing something much worse. Here we go.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's wearing and fatiguing the metal in aircraft. I came out of Chicago going to Denver. We're going down the runway when the engine caught on fire.
Really?
I'm so very glad we evacuated that aircraft. And when I was at customer service, he said the incidences of these is happening is far more frequent, and now there are actual lives that are being lost because of it.
Well, why would
aircraft is fatiguing now because of this Fukushima.
Oh, really? Because, interesting. That's, I didn't realize
Lorraine
that.
Lorraine Moret,
okay.
And Moret, or whatever.
Interesting.
She keeps sending me these technical papers on the military, and there have been aircraft crashing because of it.
Wow.
And if all you have to do is look on the road, the way the amount of rubber debris today from 2 years ago, and remember that this one vector is most likely because of the toxicity of Fukushima's radiation onto our technology. And right now, the background radiation in Seattle is 10 times higher than it was before Fukushima. Is that dangerous?
Well,
I don't know.
Well,
what's
I have
dangerous
to,
is that 1,000 times, I'll put a dosimetry badge on.
Well,
I know that aircraft coming from Asia into LAX now are removed from the public notice when they're cleaned by hazmat and DEQ.
Interesting.
And so it's like, we're not being told anything.
Well, I have to tell you on that score that 2 years ago, President Obama shut down all federal, eight federal radiation testing stations here on the West Coast. Completely shut them down.
We still have the Nuclear Emergency Tracking Center.
Okay.
And there's several places in Seattle. They're there monitoring on a moment-to-minute-to-minute basis, NETC.com. You can go there and look at Japan. Right now, today, it's lit up like a candle. And you, up in Seattle, have a RADCON 3, there it is, RADCON 3 level alert, and it's when a small particulate filters down out of the stratosphere, because now what we have is another radiation band to go through if we want to go into space.
Well,
and this one is really hostile.
Well, I think this is all the more reason to support efforts like Dr. Emoto's office and the Angel Water, because those are real solutions that can help people, you know?
Well, the fullerenes are an opening interest. I wrote about those, and that was published a few issues back in Nexus magazine.
Uh-huh.
However, there's a darker side to fullerenes.
Mm-hmm.
And with the deployment of a tactical nuke using deuterium instead of exclusion zone water inside this thing, and what you now have is a neutron fullerene fusion bomb. And it's been deployed in Yemen, it's been deployed in Gaza, and most likely was the weapon of choice that brought down 9/11. When Building 7 came down, and you're watching that 617-foot steel beam, as it started to fall, it vaporized.
Right, I remember seeing
that. That's not thermite. There's only one thing in the world that will do that, and that's the plasma. And so what Ben Lockheed just came out with their teleportation laser. That's how you ignite it. And if you want to go to the National Ignition Facility in Livermore, you can get a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger looking at the target when he was governor. This weapon came from Mossad. It's not a Mossad. I mean, they didn't do 9/11, but certainly they knew about it because that is the weapon that was used that would bring those buildings down like it would, not thermite.
Right, right.
It was a controlled tactical nuke, and they're using it everywhere now.
Well, you know, one of the things I want to bring up is that I've been in telepathic communication with the Galactic Alliance here for the past year, and their ambassador has told me that they interviewed numerous times during the Cold War in the 70s, 80s, 60s, and throughout that period, when Russian generals or American generals hit the launch button on nuclear weapons targeted to either country, they just simply disabled it, and they've done that many times. They're not going to let us destroy ourselves.
I think that if you read the Upanishads, there is a balance in the universe of good and evil.
True.
That means there's no more of this than that, because in fact, it's neither. It's just man's way of seeing what's going on.
True.
And that's been clouded by our limited conscious awareness.
That's true.
And really, there's more going on here than just what you think about alien. I think.
Oh, I know that.
I'm sensing it myself.
Sure.
My future is literally, literally changing my past. When I actually worked at the UW with SEAL Corporation, Navy SEALs didn't exist. And I was training them. But they didn't exist, and they weren't SEALs like Swim Buddy. This was SEAL Corporation out of Amherst, like maybe sealing on a jar. And it later became Navy SEAL, but that was not at the time it was literally happening. Interestingly, that's how your future speaks to your present and changes the past, the primary wave, that cavitation ball.
Interesting. One of the I want to lend a little spiritual perspective on this because it's fascinating what you've been saying, Richard, and thank you so much for sharing that with me and my listeners. Ray Chandran, who was here a month ago, I've had him on my show several times, just a fascinating guy. And he said that if you want something really good to happen in your life in the future, you visualize it. Let's say, you know, getting a new, if you want a new job, a better job, or a wonderful new relationship, or a house, or whatever, you visualize that in the future. And then you bring that energy back to the present so that you're...
It's creative visualization.
Correct.
All of these people talk about it. The thing is, imagination, at our level of development... imagination is reality.
That's
However,
true.
This is not real. And that's the most important thing to realize. It's your imagination that's real. And if you wish to change the movie, it's possible to do that.
That's true. That's true.
And that's the book I'm writing. It's called The Non-Local Mind in a Holographic Universe. It sequels my power tools, which were the 8 protocols I developed for Navy SEALs to make them supermen. And now I'm trying to move that into how would you restructure water and actually take your desire, your dream, your purpose, which, by the way, is not intent. Intent is what happens. Purpose is slightly different and is where you can take dominance over J2 software. The thing is, you have to be train the mind. And that includes using beliefs as a pair of clothing. They're arbitrary and used to solve a problem. And when they're not useful, you put them in a drawer out of the way.
Well, let's do an experiment right now, if you don't mind. I believe that we can help the children and the people of Japan, especially Fukushima, with their radiation issues, to protect the kids there and the adults, certainly in Fukushima and throughout Japan. So what I'd like to do is send love and light to Fukushima and to the kids there, and also to the Moto Peace Project for their efforts to prevent cancer among the kids. This is a great organization, and I just want to take for a minute, and for everyone around the world and all my listeners in every continent, to send love and light to Fukushima, to Japan, and the Emoto Peace Project to help them in their efforts to prevent cancer in those kids. Anyway, Richard, what you're saying is so interesting. What kinds of projects are you working on again for the future?
Well, I'm like, one of the projects right now is how sound and movement, dance, mm-hmm. Mukumba, whatever, how that changes physical reality. Wow. It's an older technology from a previous epoch. Our epoch is on nuclear energy and electric currents, mm-hmm. and it's creepy. And previous epochs had other technologies. I'm looking into some of those right now. I'm doing sustainable lifeboats as a project, you know, setting up communities that will survive some of these weird things that are about to happen. However, there are some things you can't plan for.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do I do for those people that don't have the money, like me, to bug in or bug out? What
sure.
are we going to do?
Sure.
And I'm talking about possibly, there's a movie out, for example, called Astral City. It's about what happens at the moment of death and what is death and what it is not.
Uh-huh.
I spent some time in the jungles with Evan Alexander last year, mm-hmm. in Mexico, and now I had Kubler Ross as one of my teachers with James Hillman.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have this sense there's something more going on here than physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be calling that one not sustainable lifeboats, but more likely the Garden of Zen. And, you know, for those of us that don't have the money to bug in or bug out, what do we do?
I've been reviewing Dr. Irvin Laszlo's new book on
the... Laszlo is also one of the people
He's fascinating. Yeah, I've been reviewing one of his books with Professor Albert Einstein, who's been coming in. And I should have those comments done by this weekend with luck, or early next week. But he said,
"Feel free to keep me in your loop and to educate me. I'm constantly seeking and craving data."
Oh, all right. Well, I'll be done. I should have it done by Monday. I'll give you a call in, and I'll go over what
it'd
Professor
be nice to hear from
Einstein.
Him. Yes.
Okay. Oh, Einstein has said. We've got a couple minutes, and I just want to say I want to keep you on here, Richard, of course, to the end of the hour, but I just want to thank everyone for listening today. A week from today, we'll be having Laura Eisenhower on the show. She's the granddaughter of President Dwight D. Eisenhower, who signed an illegal secret agreement back in 1954 with a group of reptilians that in exchange for their technology that they would be allowed to abduct humans. It's a long story what happened since that time, but she has some firsthand knowledge as to what happened. She'll be down at James Gillian's wonderful UFO ranch. I will be there leading a group of people on September 11th, 12th, 13th. And for more information, please see my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and click on the events tab. Also, tomorrow on Saturday and Sunday, I'll be out at Ocean Shores doing readings there as part of a psychic fair. And at 8 p.m. tomorrow, I want everyone around the world to please just take a minute or two and send love and light to the children and people of Fukushima to help them with their with the radiation. And with that, Richard, I'd love to have you I'd love to have you give the closing comments for today's show. We've got about
I'm going to say one last thing. Just saying prayer at dinner restructures everything.
Wonderful, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, the purpose of my program is to make a better planet and to raise consciousness, and so anything anyone can do to do that is certainly welcome, And it starts with each individual thinking better thoughts of love and gratitude for the entire planet. Well, Richard, thank you so much for coming on today, my friend.
Yeah, nice to meet you also.
All right.
Keep in touch.
All right. I'll give you a call on Monday, and we'll talk about Professor Einstein's comments.
Thank you. You betcha.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, friends, we'll talk to you. I hope you have a fantastic week. And
well, I someday like to come back home to Seattle and do some workshops.
All right.
See
well,
what's changed up there.
You're welcome anytime.
And with, nice talking to you.
You too, Richard. And I want to play this favorite music of Dr. Emoto, and for everyone to send love and light to the kids of Fukushima and the Emoto Peace Project for their wonderful work to help them with their radiation.